Welcome to the Manic Gardener, show number 2. I'm Kate Gardner, and yes, that's my name. Different spelling, but what can you do? This week, and later again in October, we're going to spend time with Jason and Yvonne Kim, seed potato growers here in Gallatin Valley in Montana, where I live. There are lots of potato farmers here. It's one of the major agricultures in the valley. But Jason and Yvonne have one of the few organic certified potato growing farms in Montana, and one of only a handful which are certified to provide seed potatoes, organic seed potatoes, to other growers. They are also, without doubt, the only organic farmers who have moved away from conventional farming because of a dancing accident. Yvonne tells the story of the accident itself at the end of this interview, but you will have to wait for Jason's story in order to hear the connection between that accident and organic farming. Most of Jason and Yvonne's farm is conventional agriculture, which would seem to put them off limits for this show. However, in the last couple of decades, Jason has moved his family farm and much of the valley with him into far more sustainable practices. In order to understand what's involved with this, I realized once I'd gotten there that you really had to have some idea of how the larger scale operation works. So this week, we'll be spending time with Yvonne, who will give us a tour not only of her and Jason's small-scale organic fields, but also of the truly large-scale operation that helps them produce the conventional seed potatoes, which is their main harvest, the sorting facility, the washing shed, and the many storage cellars. Yvonne also turned out to be a terrific guide to the philosophy of farming. At one point, she said this.
My dad was a farmer, and he always said, I don't need to gamble, and I'll never need to go to Vegas. I'm a farmer. I gamble every single day.
At the end of today's show, you'll find a gardening tip about, big surprise, potatoes. And sometime in the next few weeks, we'll come back to visit with Jason in the fields, it's harvest time now, to learn more about what he's done to make his farm more sustainable. To start this whole somewhat daunting process, I got in my car yesterday and drove 10 or 15 miles west to visit the Kims at their farm. The Gallatin Valley is typical of the Rocky Mountains. We're 4,500 feet high or so. We wouldn't make it in Colorado, but oh well. The valley at its widest point is about 60 miles wide, over 70 miles long, and a lot of that is planted in seed potatoes. These are potatoes which end up not on your dinner plate, but back in the earth. They are sold to other farmers who plant them and grow the potatoes that we actually eat. And there are very stringent requirements for keeping seed potatoes disease and pest-free so that the farmers who buy them know that they are getting a clean product and their fields will probably stay disease and pest-free. This particular farm is 12,000 acres, almost 19 square miles. It's part of a multi-generational family enterprise. Jason's father, his uncle, his brother, and his brother-in-law all co-own and co-work it. Most of the wives, sisters, and mothers help out driving tractors or trucks or helping to sort potatoes. And the little kids, ones too young for school, are often found riding along in one of those tractors. My drive took me from freeways to gravel roads, and at length I parked in front of a double garage before a neat modern house. Inside, Yvonne scooped up her toddler, Joshua, who accompanied us uncomplaining and nearly silently for the next 3 hours, but I do promise that the podcast will not be that long. Then she led the way to her car, and we drove to see the organic fields.
So, why do you refer to the organic fields as your fields?
Because Kim's Organic Potatoes is mine and Jason's business. And it is not the farms, although without the farms, which is Kim's Seed Potatoes, we could not be. We couldn't, because we mooch everything off of the farm. To do organic potatoes, you need to have the planters, the harvesters, the cellars to store them, and all you would never do that for a 2-acre plot of potatoes. I mean, you would never buy...
So you have all the equipment.
I have all the equipment, and I have the storage space to do it, but the actual 2-acre plot, well, 6 acres is what we have total, is mine and Jason's.
I see. Okay. So the family at large has a much bigger acreage.
Oh, yeah.
And this is it. Are we going to climb out?
We can, or I can just kind of explain it to
sure.
you.
Sure. What are we looking at
there's
here?
There's three fields.
Okay.
So
three fields.
This is, like, that little section there and this section here. This is my plot for this year.
Okay. So we're sitting at the side of a road, and we're looking at, well, one stretch directly outside the car is some bare furrows. And it's not very big. It's like 2 car lengths, right? Wide? Maybe?
Well, no, because at the end it's a lot wider because it's a diagonal.
Ah, okay.
It's
yes.
This is just right about 2 acres.
Okay, this field here.
So, yeah. I have 3 fields. Each of them is right around 2 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I have 3 plots is because with potatoes, you can't put them potatoes, potatoes, potatoes.
So you rotate your crops.
So we rotate, and when it's not in potatoes, it's in green manure.
Mm-hmm.
Which we do peas.
Can you explain that?
Green manure is growing things that are good for the soil and then killing them down, not using it for anything. Like peas are amazing for the soil.
So you plow them under.
Yes, you plow them under when they're still alive, when the plants are still alive.
Right.
And I can tell you from experience, I mean, my weeds have gone down immensely since we started doing this 7 years ago, just because we keep going in green manure.
And is that because you have something planted during the fallow year, so the weeds don't have a chance to move in?
Yeah, you plant something, and I mean, now I planted half winter, well, I didn't, but Jason planted half winter wheat and half, I think, hairy vetch.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what he has down there, and that's what's in for over the winter, so we always have something going, and then we keep tilling underneath the green manure.
So you give it 2 years of a cover crop?
It depends. We cannot have our organic potatoes next to the farm's potatoes because the farm is certified seed potatoes and you don't want to risk, and I mean all the potato farmers in the valley do that, you don't want to have potatoes next to potatoes just in case one field gets a disease, you don't want it spreading to the other field.
Mm-hmm.
So our potatoes kind of gets determined where they're going to go depending on where the farm's putting their potatoes.
I see.
So.
But wait a minute. You can't put organic potato. Do you mean within this 6-acre plot?
Well, see, the field over there, the wheat field that's
yes.
already been harvested?
Yes.
That's our field. Last year that was in potatoes. So I couldn't have had my field in potatoes, or we would have had the organics right next to the farm's potatoes.
Now, is the biggest issue about putting them next to each other disease spread, or is it also that any pesticides or whatever that you might spray
yep.
on the conventional
yep.
fields could drift?
Yep, it's both.
It's both. Okay.
It's both of them. And the farm is amazing about watching and keeping distance and borders, and we also have quite large borders in between where our potatoes actually are and the edge of the field. So.
Right, yeah. Okay, so you have to rotate partly depending on that, but you've got 3 to choose between. Now, the farm. When I went to look up, try to find, track you people down, I mean, I'd heard there were some organic potato farmers in Manhattan, off and on, literally for years.
And you ran into Martin Kim, Dan Kim, and Bill Kim, and you
about
didn't
a
have
dozen
a clue
others.
How to... To who to phone.
Exactly. So I ended up, I think I picked one out of a hat and it turned out to be Bill.
Which is my father-in-law.
Okay, right. And he said, you want to talk to my son. And so it actually, I only had 1 stray call.
Don't worry, you're not the only one that's done that.
I'm sure. How many of you, in fact, are there working on what you're calling the farm?
Our farm is run by 5 men. It's my father-in-law, Bill Kim, my well, Jason's uncle, Scott Kim, those two are brothers. And then my husband, Jason, his brother, Mark, and my brother-in-law, Alan. So the five of them run it, and it has been in the family for three generations. Jason's grandpa, Wilbur, was doing potatoes beforehand. And before that, his great-grandfather, Henry, is the one that bought the farm.
Wow. And so, when was that?
That you have to ask Jason.
Oh, I'll ask Jason then.
The farm itself was started in 1911, but it was not owned by the Kims in 1911. I'm not sure what year Grandpa Henry bought it.
Okay.
That would be a Jason.
So your three fields for organics
well,
are
here's
here
one.
And behind us?
Yeah, and I'll explain to you... The reason this looks all dead is because that's what you do with potatoes. You kill them off a few weeks before you're going to harvest them. And that way the skins get set and all the sugar goes down into the potatoes. And then you let them sit in the ground for a couple weeks and then you dig them up. That far corner there, you can see it just looks like a bunch of mud. That's where my red potatoes were. And my reds, I start digging by hand the end of July, beginning of August, depending when they're ready.
Now, why do you do those by hand?
Because everybody loves little reds, and I can sell them for way more. And because by that point in time, all of my buyers are starting to go, where are potatoes?
I see.
So I start digging by hand, and then once I start getting more orders, then they come out with the windrower, which you'll see today, and help me out. And
so are you digging those before you kill off the green foliage on top?
No, I kill the reds early.
I see.
Well, that's not true. Actually, I start digging those when they are still in August. They're not killed off, and that's why, I mean, I don't do very much. It's kind of just to give everybody a taste. And they know, I mean, you rub them, you're going to lose the skins.
Right.
But
right. So they have to be treated very carefully.
Yeah. But everybody loves it. So that's when we start. But anyways, the reds have all been harvested already. And that's because my market is getting more demand than I have supplies. So
that's kind of nice.
Selling a ton of reds right now. And so they harvested those all beforehand. This is the first year they've ever done that for me. So, which was wonderful.
Because I was going to ask, why are you doing that by hand? Is it because the skins are so delicate and they need to be treated
carefully? No. The fingerlings, my fingerlings are also harvested, and we always do those before harvest.
Now, what are fingerlings?
Fingerlings are long, skinny potatoes that look like fingers. Well, they're a little fatter than that. And they're a specialty potato. I don't do that much of them. It's mostly for my restaurants.
Right.
But the fingerlings we cannot harvest with the harvester because they're long and skinny, so they fall right through the conveyor belts.
Oh.
So the fingerlings, the windrower comes and digs them up for me, and then I always have a crew, and we do one Saturday, which we did 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I have everybody put them into bags.
So it digs them up, but then you have to go down the rows
but
and pick them up.
But then we have to pick them all up. Yeah.
Okay.
So they're all dug, but you just got to pick
them up.
And
when you say you're harvesting the reds by hand, what do you mean? Have they been dug up?
No, well, it depends. Okay. At the very beginning, I am out there with a shovel and my kids, and I shovel and they pick them up and stick them in bags.
Okay, and are you taking all of the potatoes you can get from a few plants?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I usually call and I get my order. I'll call and get an order from the co-op. They need 50 pounds, and I go out and dig as many plants as I need to.
Right.
When I first started this, not the first year, but I think the second year, I had the idea that I was going to be the big woman and go out there and start digging everything. And so I started taking orders for russets and golds and reds. And I had 1 week that I had 900 pounds ordered.
Oh my gosh.
And it had rained and rained and rained. And I was like, well, I got to keep my people happy. So I went out there and it was a sloppy, mucky mess.
Yep.
And in 1 week by myself, I dug with a shovel 900 pounds of potatoes.
And then you
And then I said, you know what? I'm not doing that again. And I said, that will be the last year that I do the golds and the russets because people like small reds. They don't like small golds and they don't like small russets. So now I just tell them we're leaving the golds and the russets in
and they're
let them
later.
Getting their size and you can get them later. And now you can have your reds.
So you are hand digging early because you don't want to run the machine. What's it called?
The windrower.
Windrower?
Yeah, right, that's what digs them up.
Right. And why don't you just do that?
Well, that we do when I first start in August, you can't do it with the windrower because your plants aren't dead yet.
Ah, okay.
So then I dig by hand with a shovel.
Yep.
Once we kill my plants down, then Jason will usually come and he'll just dig a little section for me And I have one of the kids from the high school. He'll come after school, and we spend a few hours and pick him up. So,
right.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So, and that depends. I mean, if Jason can come, if he's not too busy, he can. If the wind rower is available, he comes. And if he can't, then I get out there with a shovel.
Right. Okay. So should we head on out?
Well, I'm going to show you. Well, this first section here, these are my golds. You see the little tiny section in the middle there?
Yep.
This is my first year doing this. It's an experimental thing. I'm trying to do blues.
Oh, now, potatoes. This, so we're across the field that's right next to the road here. We're looking at one area, maybe 50 yards, 25 yards off, that's still got some foliage.
Yeah.
And I've encountered two different kinds of blue potatoes. One has become quite popular and only has a blue skin, but the other one is blue all the way through.
This is, well, you know, yes, it's blue all the way through, but really it's purple.
Right. Actually, yes, blue. You're right. They are purple.
And this is one of the prettiest potatoes ever. If you slice it down the middle, it almost looks like a purple amethyst rock.
Yeah.
Really, really pretty.
Right. I grew a few.
But this is my experimental plot. So I'm not going to sell it to everybody. I've already told some of my chefs, and I'm trying to find out who will use them and who I'm going to sell to. So I'm just trying that this year. But in here we had the golds go first, which are waiting for harvest, and then the purples, or the blues, I should say. And then my fingerlings were beyond that, and my reds were beyond that, but they've all been harvested. And then this patch over here that's not killed down yet, those are all my russet Burbanks.
Right.
So those are all my varieties.
Okay. So it's five or six different kinds of potatoes.
One, two, three. Well, I have two different kinds of reds, so one, two, three, four, five, six.
All right. So these are Yukon golds here.
Yes,
that's Yukon a golds. Lovely potato.
Yes,
they are
so
buttery.
That is my favorite potato. That is my very
I've
favorite.
I've grown a few of those as well, and they are delicious. So we are driving now. Okay, I don't seem to be pressing the right thing. It's just the window.
Oh, are you wanting the window? Oh, it's locked. I have kids.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Given the trouble that I had with opening the window, it's a darn good thing I wasn't in charge of any of the irrigation systems we saw while we were driving, because they were enormous.
So there are the irrigators out there, and you said one
those are
was
pivots.
A pivot, and that means
both of
what?
Those are pivots. They're just very large irrigation systems.
And one, so it's a long metal tube. Supported on each end on sort of triangular braces.
Well, the middle there is where your pump is. That's mm-hmm. where the water comes up from the ground, and then it's just got wheels that move it around. You set it all with a computer, and it puts out however much water you've set it to do and in whatever amount of time.
So the center stays fixed.
Yeah.
And the two ends are on wheels, and they rotate slowly.
Yeah, well, you see, I mean, there's wheels,
yep.
several sets of wheels, and there's a lot of pivots in the valley.
Right.
And most of them are circular. If you see this one here, the center is right down in the middle of the field. So it's a huge, big circle that it does the field.
Right.
But then it's got the two corners that are not being done, obviously.
Right. The pivot irrigator, when it's set up, actually has one, two, three, four, five sections.
Oh, it totally depends on your pivot and on your field. There are
right.
some pivots
but this
that can
one
have
I'm
12
looking
sections.
At has five.
Right? Yeah, and
it
that's
already looks pretty darn big.
That's not very big at all, actually.
Uh-huh.
So, and our farm is getting more and more pivots. It's just so much easier.
What's the alternative to pivots?
Wheel lines. And wheel lines are also on wheels, of course,
mm-hmm.
But you need to go out and you need to move them by hand.
I see.
When Jason and I were dating, I mean, and when we first got married, he'd be up in the summertime every single night, 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock
in the
morning,
to move
wheel lines.
And you married him anyway.
I did. It's better than a dairy farmer.
I was going to ask where you grew up.
I grew up on a feedlot. I grew up on a farm with 1,200 cattle, but not dairy cattle.
Okay.
So, and I grew up in Canada.
Where?
Just outside of Winnipeg,
uh-huh.
Manitoba.
Uh-huh.
So, but Jason and I both went to the same Christian college.
Where?
Iowa. Dort College,
uh-huh.
D-O-R-D-T.
Uh-huh.
And
that's where you met?
That's where we met. So, He couldn't find anybody in the States, so he had to import.
He had to actually leave the country to find someone willing to marry him?
He had to import to find somebody that would marry him.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Now, that irrigator that we just passed, what kind was that?
That right there is a wheel line.
Okay, so the wheel line is much lower and less less high-tech looking, and apparently less high-tech in operation as well.
Well, it still puts the water on, but you got to do it all by hand.
But it rolls forwards?
Yep.
What do you have to do by hand there with the wheel line? It rolls forwards across the field.
I'll show you.
Spraying as it goes.
No, it doesn't roll as it goes.
Oh.
It...
You set it and it sprays, and then you move
it. You set it in one spot and it sprays there, and then you move it a full wheel length.
Oh no.
And then it sprays there.
Oh no.
And so it depends on your sets. Most of the time it's like a 4-hour long set.
How the heck do
And
you
so
move
every
it?
Four that's why you gotta get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, because every 4 hours. See that yellow thing in the middle there?
Alright, so it looks like a miniature race car in this one place attached to the long hose, and apparently you get in that and you can use it.
Well,
to
you don't
move.
Get in it. You just lift that thing up and then you hit turn the it lever. On and you move it as far as you need to move it, and you know how long your sets need to be.
That's in the middle of something that's how long? 50 yards?
It totally depends on what your field
but
is.
But it's amazing that it can move the whole thing without breaking it.
Well, see, and the thing is, you can take your pipes apart, too.
Clearly.
You might have a wheel line that's only 2 or 3 lengths long, and you
right,
might have one that's 15. Who knows?
Well, it astonishes me that you can use that one motor in the middle of something like this. And
well, see,
the ends
here at the end, you see the black hose at the end there? That's hooked up to the same type of valve that I showed you at the other end where the hand lines are hooked up to.
Right, so that's your water supply there. And
there
are a lot of those down the field.
Yep.
Right.
But this is our field, which was done in wheat this year. This is also our field, which is done in alfalfa. Not the organics, but the farms. And usually that's what it is with potatoes. We switch off between wheat and alfalfa and then run the rotations with that.
And is that just 1 year on, 1 year off?
No. Ask Jason.
Okay, I'll ask Jason.
I don't want to say anything because I'll say it the wrong way. So.
All right. Well, apparently you started the organics. I'm going to close the window here because it might make a little less noise for us.
Okay.
You started the organics. Is that right?
Yes. Jason and I did.
How long ago?
In 2004. Reason.
Okay.
I was teaching. I taught high school English at Mentor.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I taught high school English too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I taught high school English for 5 years, and then I got pregnant with our first child, Willem, and I did not want to be a working mom, and so I quit teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And right next to our house, there's a small little area that we actually want to build a shed on someday. And we just said, you know, just for experiment, just to see, we wanted to try to grow potatoes without any chemicals. No intention of going organic, no intention of marketing them. It was just kind of, hey, you know what? We've got the land. Let's try. Well, and the biggest reason, Jason wanted to see, you know, what can we change on the farm?
Oh, and so it was sort of an experimental plot.
Very much experimental.
And
Jason also has another business. He does compost tea. And so he wanted to see, can I grow the potatoes basically just with the compost tea as a fertilizer without using all the pesticides and chemicals and all the rest of it, just to see how we could benefit the farm. Well, we grew these potatoes on this little plot, and in the fall was like, okay, now what? We've got
all these potatoes.
We got these potatoes. What do we do? And Jason's like, well, I'll get on the phone and see what you can do, if you can sell a few of them or
great,
whatever. And I said, well, we're not organic. And he said, no, not certified.
Now, what's the difference?
We were organic, by the way. We had grown them, but we were not certified because we hadn't gone through inspection. And you have to go through the inspection and have all the paperwork. So, yeah, I had to do 4 different inspections this year. I had one huge inspection for the organics, and then 3 inspections for Montana seed potato certification, which is done by Montana State University Potato Lab.
And what are they inspecting for?
Any disease.
They're looking for disease.
Yep. They actually have a little book that they send out to all the potato buyers in Idaho, Washington, wherever. And it says on there, at least I think they send it to all those people, but they do have a little book that'll say Kim seed potatoes and zero disease. And if you have anything, it gets marked in the book. So,
right.
Which you don't want.
No. No, I would think not.
No, they are very, very, very strict.
Okay. And they, but they, how, do they inspect every year?
Yep.
Okay.
Three times. 3 times every summer. Every single potato farm in the valley.
That's going to keep them very busy.
Yep. But anyway, so I called the co-op in town and just explained, you know, we grew them organically, but we're not certified, so we can't sell them for the same price as you would certified potatoes, and check and see, and they were wonderful. The co-op actually, what are they called? Montana Harvest, is that the one that's downtown?
Yeah.
I think they were actually the first ones that I called, and they took a few. Mm-hmm. Co-op took a few, and then Oak Street Natural Market also took a few.
So you got some into three different
I got some into
stores.
Three different places, and they were all wonderful, and they're like, yeah, we'll try it, we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it went great. It was a total answer to prayer, because it was like, you know, I quit teaching, and we had another mouth to feed, and
right.
And all of a sudden, this just kind of worked.
Extra income.
Yeah. And I had a great relationship with all of my buyers. I still do. I appreciate all of them so much.
And I assume that you can sell them for more per pound.
Now that we are certified, we can.
I see.
Yeah.
How much more?
I don't know. I don't remember what I sold the first ones for.
But now?
Now, average, about $1 a pound is what I sell them for, and of course, the grocery stores add their own markup to it. I actually base my prices off of Rodale's price organic report.
Right.
Rodale's does a great job of doing that, and that's what I've told all my buyers, too. I take the average of what they're selling across the country, and that's what I stick them at. So
this is the Rodale Institute in Pennsylvania?
Yes, yes.
Right, a big organic.
Huge organic.
Research institution.
They have a wonderful, wonderful website, and on that website they list 9 or 10 different major cities in the United States. Boston, Las Vegas, I think, is on there. Houston, Texas is on there. Seattle, Washington. But it's all these very large cities across the country, and then it says, this is how much in those cities they're charging for a 50-pound box of red potatoes.
Right.
So then I take the average of all of the different cities and go from there.
And that's your price.
Yeah.
That's your asking
price. Well,
and
price. I mean, it's not exactly, I mean, it right. might be 97 cents on there, but then I figure, you know what, I'm calling them every single week, finding out exactly what they need, delivering them to them, and...
You can ask a little more.
Yeah, and I also, I mean, if it goes way up and way down, I don't switch every single week because that's not fair to my buyers either.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, usually in the spring I go down just because that's what the average trend is. But I try to stay at about the same for...
Why do you go down in the spring?
Why? Just... Well, it goes up and down. It depends.
I thought you could ask more because there were fewer of them and they're nice.
Well, see, far enough into the spring, yeah, that's the case. I'm not thinking spring. I'm thinking like January-ish. But anyways, this here is one of our farm's fields.
Okay.
And if you look up there.
Big stretch of furrows with dead potato plants in them.
Well, these are all done here. So this is just the vines that have been thrown out.
And what do you do with those? Anything?
Till them under.
Okay. So. Wouldn't that, I always try to pick mine up because I don't want any, if there's any disease there, I want to get them out. But I guess that would be too much work.
The farm doesn't have any disease because they rove them 3 times during the summer or 4 times, depending on how much time we've got and all
the
disease.
What do you mean rove them?
Rogue, R-O-G-U-E. Mm-hmm. They have a crew that walks through them and picks out any disease plants, which they have to do because they're certified for seed, as we are now too. We have to rogue our potatoes now too. So mm-hmm. This is our second year. It's our first year that all of our potatoes are certified for seed.
Uh-huh.
So...
So are we waiting for them to
move? We are waiting for them to move, and there must be some kind of problem because they're not moving.
Okay, so out in the field here, well ahead of us, there are two white trucks, dump trucks, and a couple of pieces of green machinery. Can you tell me what those are?
We ended up waiting for them for about 40 minutes, which was great for me because I got to ask all kinds of extra questions, such as this one.
Owns all that machinery.
Yes.
How many trucks do you own?
That's a very good question.
Ask Jason.
Ask Jason.
All right. I will.
But and then you see way down there.
Whoa. I learned a little about how some of the machinery works.
The far wind rower that you see down in the middle of the field there?
Yes.
That one only digs up 2 rows of potatoes.
And you have a newer, bigger one?
I met the baby in the back.
Did you wake up?
Hi. Since you're not moving. We're not moving, so I woke up.
Are you grouchy?
Okay.
Mark and Jason.
Who was certainly the most cheerful, grumpy baby I've met in quite a while.
And then we have a dairy farmer that has been driving the other.
I learned something about the people who work with them on the farm.
15, 20, 25 years for a long time.
Asked another question.
And what kind of potatoes are those?
These are umatillas.
And what are they used for?
That's a very good question.
Ask Jason?
Ask Jason.
Okay. How could you tell they were umatillas?
I just know this is a umatilla field.
Oh.
And several others.
That would be a Jason question.
We discussed potato storage.
That's another reason why I do my reds early. Reds do not store as nice as other potatoes do.
Right.
My fingerlings will be just as pretty in June, next June, as they are when I dig them up now in August.
Right.
But the reds, by Thanksgiving, they start looking ugly. Golds will stay nice as long as they don't have any light on them. If they have any light on them, then they turn into greens rather than golds.
Yeah, very quickly.
Yeah, golds are terrible for that. And that's a problem with having grocery stores doing it too, because grocery stores set them all out and they nicely sit in the light all day long and
turn green.
Had one of the more hilarious conversations about marketing that I've ever had.
For a minute, so.
You keep telling me to ask Jason.
Well, you can ask me marketing questions unless you need to do that.
I know so little about marketing that I wouldn't know what to ask you.
Huh.
What would an intelligent person ask you about marketing?
Well, I don't know. I don't really do any marketing.
Actually, I'm just thinking
advertising. I don't really do anything like that.
No, you just made phone calls.
No, that's...
Since you've got so many potential buyers, why don't you expand your organic operation?
I have 5 children.
Time.
That's why I don't.
Does it pay?
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful. And I love doing it, but I can't... Yeah, you're going to be a pest. I can't do everything, and Jason has said, too, we need to get bigger. Well, you know what? Someday we will. When all of our kids are back in school, that might be an option. But right now, I'm a mom before I'm a potato farmer. And there's my little girl!
Who's she riding? Who's she riding
with? Grandma. My mother-in-law drives one of the trucks. Oh, that works good. Then I'll get Liza right now. That works perfect. And then when we're done, we can go have lunch.
Those are some nice big potatoes. Wow, there are some outsized ones there. There's one that's at least, what, 8 inches long?
Russ, you're moving and you're not in the truck.
How big is too big for seed potatoes?
Ask Jason.
Ask Jason. All right, then.
See, I told you, I don't know anything.
You know plenty.
I'm just going to sit here and I'm not going to move. Right in the middle of everybody.
She's on strike.
Don't know what you guys want me to do. No, Russ is not moving.
Hey, Mr. Price! How are you?
Hi, Laura.
What are you doing?
Peaches and cream.
Right there in the truck cab.
That's our Perry. We love him, love him, love him.
At this point, we drove another few miles over some more gravel roads to look at the storage cellars.
I have to ask you to disinfect your feet.
Sure. How do I do that?
effect it made up.
And this involves taking our shoes off and waiting. No? Okay, we're walking into a dim shed. Oh, and there's no disinfectant set up, which isn't stopping Yvonne. Should we just stand at the edge then? And
they don't have it, and I don't even know. Is this
all
right?
So we're...
lights. Here, you can come.
You sure?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
But these are my reds.
Oh, that's lovely.
This whole thing is full of cherry reds, and this one is full of dark red normals.
And we are looking at objects which are, what, maybe 24 feet long or something? Uh-huh. And they hold potatoes.
Yeah. And then somewhere in here are my fingerlings, but I don't know where they are.
And these... And what's the difference then between a cherry red and a Norland red?
Pretty much absolutely nothing. You could hold them both in your hand. You would not be able to tell the difference between them, except for the fact that the cherry reds store longer than the dark red Norlands.
There you go.
And that's why I started growing them.
To be able to provide red potatoes over a longer period of time.
Half the time when I switch over, I don't even know I'm switching over. I mean, they're basically the same.
So where do I get my potatoes?
Oh, you'll get yours. I've got some for you at the cellar.
There's another cellar.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cellars.
There are 8 cellars, and each one is a separate building of some considerable magnitude.
Yeah.
Mine.
But mine, my potatoes eventually go into what's called the washing shed. Mm-hmm. And that is the same place that the oversized go into. And my potatoes stay in those big white plastic bins so that they're separated from the farm's potatoes.
Yeah.
But then mine are in the washing shed because I have to wash mine, of course, before I can sell them.
So the seed potatoes do not get washed.
Do not get washed. The only things that get washed are the conventional oversized for the farm and then all of my organics.
And they can only get washed after they have had their skins harden off.
Right. That's not completely true. I wash, when I'm digging in the beginning of August by shovel, I wash by hand.
By hand?
Yeah.
Wow.
I stick them all in a wheelbarrow in the front yard, and Jason put a drain in the bottom of the wheelbarrow. And
you spray them and tumble them around.
Yep. And they lose some of
it. In the background, you can hear the movie that the children are watching in the back seat.
It's a lot easier,
so how are they washed in the washing cellar?
I'm going to show you.
Oh, good.
I will show you that. Do-do-do-do-do-do. And then you can have a brief look at what happens with the farm's potatoes. See,
good.
Here is our crew.
Okay, so here on the right, we have a crew, a bunch of women mostly standing there.
The truck unloads them. They go up the conveyor belt. They go into that big bin, which is constantly full. And then they go up there. They go past the ladies.
And the ladies
are picking out the clods, any bad potatoes, vines, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they go from there.
And then over here, is that dirt going into that truck?
Yes, and that's the dirt going into the truck that will be brought back to the field.
Thank you.
And everybody's picking through.
Everybody is sorting potatoes here, pulling out the ones that are too large, pulling out the dirt clods.
And I'll give you a...
So are we getting out here for a sec?
A feel for how it looks in there, because everybody's always shocked at that. You can leave your microphone thing.
Ah, that's what she thinks. No, I'm not. She said I could leave my microphone thing, but that's not happening. Wow. Conveyor belt full of potatoes, dumping them onto another conveyor belt full of potatoes. Oh, this is a...
We'll go all the way to right here.
The walls here must be 15 feet high. The ceiling is another 5 at least. This thing is 30 feet wide, and it is going to be full of potatoes. The conveyor belt moves slowly back and forth, dumping potatoes higher and higher till it is filled up to the roof. Wow.
You have to have a feel for it.
Yeah.
There's 8 cells.
propellers. So this is actually one of the smaller ones.
This is a smaller one. What are those big steel tubes?
They're the circulation tubes. Do you see how it's set up right in front of the potatoes there?
On the floor, yes.
Holes in them for the air to go through. And so it keeps it dry and it keeps the temperature regulated.
Do those only go on the floor?
Yeah.
Okay.
They go on the floor and there's... In the floor, there's holes that go up into the thing to put the air through it. So, actually, not in the floor. It's all along the side there. You won't see it on this side. It's all on that side.
Okay.
They hook up to it.
I see. So they actually blow air?
Yeah.
Okay. So they keep air moving through.
Every single cellar, you see on the cellar there, there's the red, yellow, green light.
Yes.
Once the cellar is closed off for the wintertime, those red, yellow, and green show you. If it's red, you've got trouble. And that means something's wrong with your temperature or moisture or whatever. Because it's all very meticulously moisture temperature controlled.
So those are automatic regulations.
Yeah. Yeah. And
sensors in there somewhere.
Green is good and yellow is check it out.
Right. Got it.
Dad comes down here every single night, drives around the cellars and makes sure everything is good. Dad doesn't do it. Jason or Mark does it.
What happens if, okay, you've got red and there's a problem, you know, in the middle of this enormous building, something's rotting. What in heaven's name do you do?
Well, they have had that before. They actually did it once at the seed cellar that they had to cut out the back of the wall.
To get at the problem?
To get at the rotten potatoes, but that's a very, very, very rare occurrence.
Once you get to the particular building, are there individual sensors in different places that can let you know where the problem is?
No.
So what are you, you're digging? How do you find it?
It's mostly you'd go in there and it'd say your temperature is at whatever and you fix your temperature. They check it so often that you're not going to have a major problem because it would get fixed immediately.
So that instance where there were actually some rotting potatoes
was
very rare.
They had a bad frost before. They had a bad frost that year.
Oh.
And when you have a bad frost, you can't see the frosted potatoes until after they've set for a while.
Right.
So
some of the harvested potatoes were going bad.
Yeah. This is our new cellar. We just built this summer.
And that is twice as big.
Yes.
So your business is expanding.
Yes.
The economy is flagging. People are out of work. You're doing okay?
Yeah.
Good.
We're doing
And the business is growing.
Yeah, I mean, the prices on potatoes are not always good.
Right.
But...
And you can't always predict what they're going to be.
No, you can't. I mean... my dad was a farmer, and he always said, I don't need to gamble, and I'll never need to go to Vegas. I'm a farmer. I gamble every single day. And you do. I mean, you don't have a clue what's going to get thrown your way between weather and...
No, you stay here and watch the movie. Mommy's going to be back in just 1 minute, okay? I'm just going to show her the cellar, okay?
I've never seen the cellar.
Okay. Office.
Okay, and the office is a large, bare warehouse-like area.
Okay, so why in the world did you guys put those right against the door, you silly people?
Those potatoes?
These are all oversized.
Okay.
All of these big guys.
They are big.
Get sold for conventional. And down here, I'll just show you.
These are what? At least 4 or 5 inches long.
This all gets filled up. When they wash, well, and when I do too.
Okay, lifting out blocks of wood from a culvert here in the floor.
And that gets filled up with water, and then you push the potatoes into the water, and the water pushes it over to what I'm going to show you in a second.
Okay, so it carries the potatoes along the culvert.
The water does.
Right.
So, and my potatoes, where are my bins? My bins aren't in here.
Oh my gosh, they did block a door. What is behind?
I'm not sure why they put that right there.
But is that your office?
No, this whole building is my office.
All right. What's behind that door?
I have huge, big plastic white bins, and that's what my potatoes go into. And they are all this whole wall, and last year that whole wall were covered with my potatoes.
Washed?
What?
Washed potatoes?
No, they're not washed. When they're in here, they're not washed yet.
Right.
They get washed in the next room. So, when I wash my potatoes, Jason takes a
skid steer and tips one of my big plastic bins,
mm-hmm.
which carries, oh, I don't know how many thousand pounds. I wish I could have shown you. I don't know where they put my bins. But anyways, it dumps it into the water. The water brings it over to here. They go up this conveyor belt.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing...
That's a tumbler?
Yeah, you can feel the side of it. Yeah, you can reach in there. It's got all little, like, rubber fingers.
Yeah.
And water is shooting out from the entire thing. And so the potatoes...
And it rotates.
Potatoes have sat in the trough with water.
Right.
They've gone up there. Then they come in here, and they slowly spin through there, so they're getting all the stuff wiped off of them. A lot of them are already clean by the time they get here.
Right.
They come through here, they go up here, and at this point, it's everything. If they're ugly, if they're perfect, they go on this belt.
Okay.
Then I have somebody standing here, and they dump the number twos onto here.
Another
number
belt?
Number two is anything that's got, like, a knot or a growth crack or... a small bruise, but it's still totally usable.
A tiny bit of scab.
It's got, yeah, something that's wrong with it that it doesn't look perfect.
Right.
But, like, for instance, I never eat number ones.
Right.
We don't. I mean, all we eat is number twos because they taste just as good. Just cut off the little bad part and they're fine.
Yep.
And some of my restaurants, all they use are number twos. But it makes sense. I mean, like John Bozeman's Bistro, the main thing they use my potatoes for are Yukon Gold mashed potatoes.
They don't need
number
ones.
You don't need a perfect potato for a mashed potatoes.
Right.
And I sell these for about a quarter of the price of what number ones are. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but the number ones go here, and then they roll along. Number twos roll around down to here, and the farm puts them in these bags. I still put my number twos in boxes. Like Daily Coffee Bar, all they use are number twos, but that's because they're putting most of them in burritos or in soup, so you don't need them to be perfect.
And the number ones
here,
come along
the number
here.
Ones come along here.
And this gets
usually,
divided into three possible channels.
Yeah, there's usually two people standing here,
okay.
And they do two things. They're regrading, making sure that those guys didn't miss anything.
Right.
If they did... goes on here, and this little conveyor goes up to there.
Right, to the place where the original number twos were. So
and,
rejoins those.
And then they size them here if you want. Like, for me, I have some restaurants that just like the really big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Most restaurants do because they have to peel them.
Right.
And so they take my bigger ones, which other people don't want anyways.
Right.
And then also with the reds, sometimes I'll size out the really little ones. And especially with my fingerlings, the restaurants pay me double price for the small tiny fingerlings.
Ones, yes.
But they, and so then
the baby potatoes.
Yeah, so then I size out my fingerlings. So I've got somebody here sizing. And then down here... there's two boxes. Usually, for me, the farm does it by ounces, and so they have a box that's there, too, or two boxes there. But for me, I just have two boxes. One is usually one big and one small.
Here at the end of the conveyor belt. Now, you say the farm would have two here.
Well, the farm has to go. Their boxes on the side of it, it says 50, 60, 70, 80, and 90. And they...
centimeters?
No.
What?
That means that there's approximately 50 potatoes in the box, which means they are mother potatoes.
Right.
Or there's approximately 60, or there's approximately...
so they have four grades.
And the ladies that we have sizing, for instance, Mary, I told you she'd been working for us for over 30 years.
Yes.
Mary can pick up any potato and tell you how many ounces it weighs just from holding it in her hand.
Wow.
So I can't do that. She can. I'm getting better, but she can do that. So these are my potatoes and my boxes.
And these are brown boxes instead of white ones, so they look more organic.
Yes,
and
which was our choice.
Right, and it says organic potatoes.
I'm just going to give you some of these little baby reds.
Lovely. I'll take them.
And then with my potatoes,
those are beautiful.
I have some that get sold as bulk, but I also have, like, Town and Country would not sell my potatoes until they were bagged because they don't do bulk. So I had to start bags, which I started 2 years ago, or did I just start it last year? I don't remember. But I don't have a bagger yet that is on my Christmas list. And
thank you.
So I come here after I get Town and Country's order. They'll order 150 pounds.
And you bag potatoes?
I take them home, and my kids and I bag potatoes. There's another grocery store, and I won't name which one it is, but... they won't do my potatoes because I don't have specific liability insurance. Well, for
specific
me,
to what?
For me to buy liability insurance, business liability insurance, would cost more than all the potatoes I make in the whole year. And they will buy less than 50 pounds a week.
What would your liability insurance cover?
I guess if you got sick. These are number twos, but I'm going to give them to you because they're nice number twos.
I'll take them.
I guess if you got sick off of one of my potatoes. I don't know. It's their rule. And you know what? That's different businesses, different things.
Huh.
I'm not going to. Yeah, you might want to look through those top ones. Who knows what they've
no
got
problem.
On.
No problem.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. I like this job more and more.
So, that is how it goes. So, yeah, I will come. I make deliveries every Wednesday. I put all the seats down in my van, and the most I've ever had in there was 25 50-pound boxes. But I put airbags in my van in the back. I had to.
You did? To protect the potatoes.
And the guys were laughing when Jason called them up. He's like, I've got a minivan, and I need to get airbags, but not like the air compression underneath. And the guy's like, on a minivan? It's like, yep, it's a farm truck. My minivan is super minivan.
The business about the airbags.
What, in my van?
Yeah, why were they were surprised you were putting them in at the back, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's underneath, and they're not on all the time. I have to blow it up.
Mean you ride with them expanded?
Oh, yeah, I have to. When I have, well, imagine this thing from here to the back is solid potatoes. 25 times 50 pounds is how many pounds of potatoes? I'm sure I'm over the weight limit. Jason already said, he's like, you should write Honda Odyssey, and we could probably get an award or something.
Right.
So.
I assumed you meant you just wanted them there in case you're in an accident.
No, no, no,
you
no,
want
no.
them there
no,
for buffering.
No, they're underneath. They are underneath, and they hold up. It's lots of trucks have got it, I guess.
I see.
But minivans don't have that, obviously. Why would you need that in a minivan?
So they're sort of the floor on which these boxes rest.
I used to have it that I would drive down the interstate like this. Because I was, like, right above the interstate because I was low down, like, lowered so much because it's so heavy in the back.
Because of, okay, so your whole van would be at an angle
with the
back.
Yeah, so now I have the airbags that hold up the back. It's wonderful. It drives so much nicer. So... Yeah, and then Jason talked about selling our van. I'm like, are you nuts?
We just put all of the
We put the airbags in, and we put a hitch in the back because I pulled trailers behind this thing. And I'm like, we can't get rid of my van.
No.
My super van.
He said you had a bad dancing accident, and that's what kind of led to the... What the heck did you... Yeah. You had a headache. And he
That's
had an ulcerated
collection. The two of us together.
Heck did you do?
Well, you know the cliche? She really fell for him. I really did fall for Jason. He swept me right off my feet.
And then you fell down together.
No, we didn't fall down together. He just dropped me on my head.
Oh.
And almost killed me.
And that's why he got ulcerated.
I was in a coma for a month.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No, 3 weeks. Not a week. 3 weeks.
And he got...
He got ulcers from the tension of it. I always tell people he had a worse deal than I did. I don't remember anything.
Right.
My bad stuff. I mean, I had to recover. I had to relearn how to read and walk and write, and I didn't know anything anymore. I mean, my memory was, a lot of it was wiped out. And
has it returned?
Yeah, it did. It was like you just had to turn on a light switch and it would all come back to me. Like, my best friend came to visit me in the hospital. I was in the hospital for over a month. And my best friend came to visit me, and she had a baby, and she had a very serious boyfriend.
Yeah.
Well, I knew who she was, and I knew that I should know the rest of it. That was, I knew that I should know stuff, but I didn't know it.
Right.
So I wouldn't say anything to people.
Yes.
And she left, and I looked at my mom. I'm like, okay, that was Case, but why, what were the other people? And mom's like, well, Case had a baby. And all she just had to say, Casey had a baby. And I'm like, Braden Joseph Thomas, he was born October 31st. And uh-huh. I knew everything.
But you had to do that with item after item.
Oh, yeah. Well, my father died when I was 15. And that was in 91. The accident happened in 97, 6 years afterwards. And I could not figure out why my dad was never coming to visit me at the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
And finally, I looked at my mom. I'm like, okay, so you're here all the time. Does Dad have a problem with coming here or something? And mom's like, well, Dad died. And that's all she said. And then I'm like, he died on November 8, 1991, and I knew everything.
Did you have a rush of grief?
No, I didn't. No, because it was like, it just all came back.
Okay.
And so then I knew it all.
Okay.
But even like reading... Right. My alphabet. After I was in the coma and I came out of it, I didn't sleep at all for a few weeks, and that's very common for people that have been in a coma.
Haven't.
And so I would sit in the middle of the night and I would quiz myself, and I had a private room, and I would sit there and I'd say my alphabet and I'd say my numbers, and because it drove me nuts because I knew I should know stuff, but I didn't.
Right.
And I remember once in the middle of the night, I had no idea what came after K. Oh. And I kept going through it and going through it, and I just could not think of it. So you know that little pain button that they give you to get the nurses?
Yes, yes.
I'm pushing the pain button and pushing it, and the nurses all come running, and I was laughing. I'm like, not really a major problem. I just need to know what comes after K. And they were all killing themselves laughing. They're like, L. And I'm like, elemental P.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was a funny one.
Oh, that's amazing.
But, yeah, little things like that. But that was... Yeah, that's how Jace and I got together. That was right when we first kind of started seeing each other. And I had told, I was just going to say, who's in my driveway, but that's you. I told my roommates the week that we had the accident, like, if he does not ask me to go out seriously, that is it, because I am sick of waiting for him. And I didn't have patience, and Jason does not jump into anything without thinking through it 100 times over. And God knew that, so he... conked me out for a month, and in the month that I was conked out, Jason fell in love with me.
Yeah, so. But he stayed in love even after you woke up.
Yeah, everybody always tells me he only married me because he felt sorry for me.
Yeah, so. clearly. That's a great story.
Yeah, definitely. So at our wedding, we heard every cliche possible. Yvonne fell hard for Jason. Jason swept her right off her feet. Well, this was no accident, people.
And now the super van had brought us back to Yvonne's house, where I got out, climbed into my own quite ordinary car, and drove home. And now for this week's gardening tip, which actually gets mentioned several times by Yvonne. This has to do with the fact that potatoes, when first harvested, have very thin and tender skins and will not keep well if they are dug when the vines are still alive. In order to have potatoes that will keep for longer, let the vines die off naturally, or else cut them or kill them, and then let the potatoes sit in the ground for several weeks before you dig them up. The easiest way to kill the vines is to let frost do it, and that works well as long as it's not a really deep frost. A really hard frost can damage the potatoes that are closest to the surface of the soil. So if you have a hard frost, you're going to want to get those potatoes out immediately and use them soon. Otherwise, you can leave the potatoes in the ground to cure for several weeks, and this will ensure that they will keep better when you do dig them up. That's it for this week. Check out themanicgardener.com and garden well.